Good morning, everyone. It's great to see all of you. A lot of you were looked like empty chairs last week. Of course, it was so frigid. So those of you that weren't here last week, welcome home. It's good to see all of you. Welcome back. We are a bit more of a crowded house this morning, which is good because it's still a little chilly and it's nice when there's lots of us and we can kind of huddle together. So thanks for braving the elements. Gosh, it is been quite a weekend already. A lot of you participated a bit with our mission yesterday, and I just want to, for those of you that are unaware of our mission statement as a church, which is derived largely from the passage that Donna just read, as a church, we exist to fulfill the Great Commission and follow the Great Commandment by serving our communities, sharing our story, sending disciples to bless the nation so that God is glorified. Some of you are like, I've heard that before. Yeah, you have. And you're going to hear it again and again and again because, well, basics, fundamentals. A lot of the things that you hear me say from week to week, you've probably heard before. In fact, I dare say most everything you've ever heard me say, you've heard before, including some stories that maybe I forgot I told before. And you're like, I've heard that one. So why do we go through this process? Well, it's a reminder. Life is full of reminders. And we're going to talk quite a bit about that next week. We're going to have a very special gathering next week. You don't want to miss it. I can't tell you all the details, but we're going to have a very special celebration of communion next Sunday, and we're going to wrap up our series. But I want to talk just for a brief moment about this serving our communities bit, because yesterday some really incredible, amazing, brave people came out and helped with the recycling day at Scio Township yesterday. There's a bunch of them right there. Notice they all have smiles on their faces. Those are like frozen smiles, mind you. Although it felt awfully warm. In fact, it was something like, I think it was 80 degrees warmer yesterday than the day before, because it was like 20 instead of 60 below. Here's a couple more people, some wonderful people on our team. And then we had some latecomers that showed up as well. Didn't make the first picture, but we had to include them. So I just want to say, as your pastor, it was really exciting to see so many, I think there are 14 of us, just living out the mission of our church, serving our community, in particular, serving Scio Township. And in case you didn't know, this event occurred all of, I don't know, 1,000 yards or something from this building, just a couple doors down at the Township Hall. And it was great fun. And the fact of the matter is we kept moving, so I didn't really get all that cold. Of course, I was bundled up like Ralphie's brother, you know, some of you know. He's like, I just bundled up. But we had a good time, right? A few of you are still thawing. Yeah, okay. Well, listen, we're going to just dive in now. And I'm going to tell you guys something that you probably do know about me. I'm not a big fan of hospitals. For years, it was because I would routinely pass out whenever I would go to a hospital, it seemed like. It didn't matter what the hospital was. It didn't matter what it looked like or how old it was or how it smelled. In fact, I'd often go into the gift shop and kind of get a little queasy just going in the hospital gift shop, which doesn't make any sense at all, except that my mom has, I guess, the same sort of psychological dysfunction that I do. So both of us like to stay away from hospitals. Unfortunately, neither of us have spent a lot of time as patients in hospitals. But this all really came to a head several years ago. It was our very first Christmas Eve together, Heather and I. We were having company over. We were just really, really excited to experience this. I don't know why we were seeing stars, but we were. And so Heather was making this wonderful, wonderful cider for our guests. Family were coming over. Our first Christmas together, and this is Christmas Eve. And she was pouring the cider into a crystal bowl, and the bowl shattered. It was not stupid, but it was unfortunate, and we've never made that mistake again. But scalding hot water, like, poured all over her legs, or cider all over her legs, and she was screaming, and this is our first Christmas together. I'm like, what do I do? And so we finally, after calling nurses and stuff, we get her to the hospital, and she will never forget these words. I don't know that I ever heard them, but she will never forget these words because we're in the ER, and the doctor says, get another gurney for the husband. So here I am, my, you know, supportive husband, taking care of my bride, like, you know, on the white horse, and
No, his dad had to carry me in the hospital.
I don't like hospitals. Let's just put it that way. I'm good at home. It's just in the hospital. It's kind of rough. Yeah, I've never been a big fan of hospitals. And as you know, I think you all know, I've spent way, way, way too much time in hospitals the last few years. And I've gotten a little bit acquainted with them in Cleveland and U of M and St. Joe's and all that. But despite all my issues with hospitals, there is one place in hospitals that I really, really like. And that's the maternity ward. The maternity ward, I don't know. To me, it almost shouldn't even be in the hospital because it seems like it's just a whole different ballgame altogether. And there are a few celebrations like that of a new baby. It's such a big, big, big deal, right? We celebrate birthdays. We celebrate the anniversary of the birth each year that they are alive. And sometimes we celebrate the birth of children even after they've grown up and passed away. And we remember today is Martin Luther King's birthday or George Washington's birthday, President's Day and such. And this week, in fact, I celebrated the day when I was born and my birthday. Now, imagine for a moment, friends, a world without maternity wards. A world in which there would be no more births, no more babies. It would be quieter, of course. But it would also be a matter of time before we would experience true and total silence. The survival of our species requires new births and the maturation of those births into reproducing adults who co-create more babies. Now, believe it or not, this is actually a really alarming issue in our day today. A really alarming issue. We're all familiar with endangered species, right? You've heard about different animals that no longer exist or are on the verge of extinction. But this is actually happening today in human cultures. For instance, in Japan, the birth rate right now in Japan is about 8 births per 1,000 persons, a number that experts say is not sustainable if it continues. Like the population of Japan at some point will just cease. If you have more deaths than births, and particularly if you have no births, the species can no longer survive. We know, even reading the Bible, about all sorts of peoples that no longer exist, sometimes because they were wiped out by armies or famine or flood or such. But if babies are not made, eventually a species dies. By the way, as a basis of comparison, the worst nation right now in this regard is Monaco, which has less than 7 births per 1,000. So if you want to see some Monacans, if that's what they're called, go to Monaco and see them because, I mean, it's very possible in a few generations that culture could cease to exist. The greatest birth rate is in the country of Niger, which is 46. So compare 46 per 1,000 to 7. And you're like, so what's the U.S.? Okay, it's 13.4. So congratulations, Dave. And all right, so Dave's offspring are helping with that 13.42. Congratulations. Well, demographers, they really say that this is a potential problem in several cultures. And it's been said as well that the church is one generation away from extinction. What is the future of the church, like the global church? Are Christians having babies, so to speak, and not just in the physical sense, but in the spiritual sense? What is SIO's future? What is the future of the Church of Jesus Christ on our planet? Well, we're nearing the end of our series on family rules, a double entendre, and we've been looking at Know Thyself, we started, and then we said it's important for us to be real and to welcome strangers. We talked about resolving conflict and how important it is for us to serve together. And last week, which was honestly one of my favorite topics, we talked about celebrate diversity. And today's rule is to make disciples. So before we dive in, let's pray together. God, thank you so much for your great love for us. Your love, O Lord, it reaches to the heavens. Your faithfulness, it stretches to the skies. And it's that love and that faithfulness that we've experienced and we are called to help others experience. And it should be the most natural thing for us. Good news is always meant to be shared. And I just pray that your church, both SIO Community Church, which is yours, and your church globally, would experience many, many births, tremendous life, and that we would be faithful to your commandment, Jesus, to make disciples of all nations. Guide us, lead us now. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, before we look at the future, I want to ask a simple question. It's a question that, again, I've asked many times around here before. In fact, it was the very first question that I ever asked as your pastor, and that was, why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you here this morning? Why are you a part of this family, Sio Community Church? We need to remember this question from time to time to remember why we do things. What's our mission? What's our purpose? I wonder how many of you have family mission statements. Just a show of hands. Have any of you like sat down as a family and said, this is why we exist as a family? Okay, I'm not surprised. This week, I threw it at my family just for fun. I said, why do we exist? And they kind of looked at me like I had three heads. And I said, no, really. Why? What is our purpose as a family? I mean, we kind of get individuals and, okay, well, my purpose is to make money and my purpose is to cook and clean and my purpose is to go to school. And I mean, we kind of have this individual thing, but what is our purpose as a family? And so we had a brief discussion. It was unfortunate that we couldn't all be at the table that particular day, but we just threw some stuff out. And I just lobbed one. I'll lob this out to you guys. And maybe some of you that have, you know, your whole families live under the same roof, maybe you want to have a little discussion. Maybe not. Kids, sorry. But why do we exist as a family? And this is what I threw out, is maybe to be a contagious family of faith, hope, and love. That we would be known as a family of faith, hope, and love. Some of the words that members of my family threw out. You know, well, to serve people and love people and, you know, love others and love God and such. To be a contagious family of faith, hope, and love. I'm not saying that should be yours. It should be anyone's. But it was just kind of a question, a thought-provoking thing. Why do we exist as a family? And why do we, Sio, exist as a family? You know, organizations commonly have mission statements. And, of course, a mission statement is only as good as how often it's read and only as good as really how often it's applied. Right, you can put all sorts of mission statements together. People do this all the time. In fact, one of my favorite ones, well, just really one of my favorite local businesses, I'm sure all of you are familiar with this one, the mission statement of Zingerman's. They say, we share the Zingerman's experience selling food that makes you happy, giving service that makes you smile, in passionate pursuit of our mission, showing love and care in all our actions to enrich as many lives as we possibly can. That's quite a mouthful. There's a lot there. Some of you might think, well, Zingerman's is just to make money or to sell good food and make money, right? But there's a lot more in there. When I worked at Apple, actually, our mission statement was quite simple. The Apple Store mission statement, actually, it's contained within Zingerman's. It was simply to enrich lives. That was the whole thing. They just told us, enrich lives. I thought that was pretty good. In fact, it sounded a lot like Jesus to me. Well, I came across some mission statements this week. These are called honest church mission statements. I didn't actually make them up. I found them. But I thought some of them were creative. Some of them may be a little harsh. But this might be what some churches, really live out. See what you think of this. Our mission is to grow worship service attendance by attracting the have-it-together people in our community who will then invite other have-it-together people in our community. How about this one? Our mission is never-ending double-digit transfer growth in our relevant worship services by franchising our church across our region. Our mission is to be the only genuine church in our city because we don't need church buildings and refuse to let our children be influenced by the public school system. Brought to you by Homeschool Co-op. Okay. Our mission is to feel good that we are spirit-filled and to help others feel good through our spirit-filled worship services where God's presence feels good. Maybe you've been there. Our mission is to keep the elders happy, bills paid, and staff employed. Our mission is to be ready for 1950 in case that decade rolls around again. Our mission is to have a gospel-centered mission statement that will help a gospel-centered people do anything we want as long as it is gospel-centered. I think I've experienced churches like that before, too. Well, again, we all know our mission statement. We looked at it earlier. It's really about two basic things. It's about the Great Commission, which is about making disciples, and it's about the Great Commandment, because Jesus said, love God and love your neighbor. And we said that there's kind of three ways that we do that, through serving and sharing and sending. This is why we exist. And in many ways, it parallels the Christian Missionary Alliance commitment to be a Christ-centered Acts 1:8 family. If you talk to anyone in the Christian Missionary Alliance, say, why do we exist? To be a Christ-centered Acts 1:8 family. Maybe you're like, well, Acts 1:8, what is that? I mean, we read it earlier, but here it is. Jesus said, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Jesus said to love God and love others, the great commandment. And arguably the best way to do both is to obey what's known as the Great Commission. When Jesus, he took him aside, some of his last words spoken in Galilee, and he said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, and that's really important. It's really important to know that Jesus had all authority and he gave it to his followers. He didn't hoard it. He said, I'm giving you all authority. And this is what you're going to do with my authority. You're going to go. You're going to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And don't miss this part because this is huge. This kind of goes with the authority piece. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. To the very end of the age. See, so often what happens is people are sent out to do jobs and they're not equipped and empowered. Maybe you've had this experience. Maybe your boss came to you and said, hey, I want you to do this. It's due by tomorrow. And you're like, I don't have the resources. I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. I don't have the software. I don't have anything. Teacher says, here's your test. Here's your homework. Go do your homework. And you look at it and think, this isn't even on the internet. I mean, like, how do I do this? Hey, why don't you go chop down this tree? Here's a pocket knife. Go. You're like, So Jesus, first of all, he demonstrates all this stuff to them. And then he says, I'm with you and I give you all authority. I'm going to equip you. I'm going to empower you to go do it. And what's really exciting to me about it is 2,000 years later, we sit here because this has been happening. This wasn't some pipe dream. This wasn't some, you know, try this out and good luck and I'm leaving, so you're on your own. For 2,000 years, the kingdom of God has been advancing all over this planet to every nation, tribe, and tongue. And Jesus told them to go and make disciples. Love God, love others, go and make disciples. These are not commands, but they're suggestions. Jesus said nothing about building buildings, having potlucks, styles of music, wearing robes, reading from a King James Version, or creating a website. And those may all be part of the process. But he said, make disciples. So what's a disciple? Simply, it's a student. It's a follower. It's a protege or an apprentice. Parents, this is what you do every day, whether you realize it or not. You're making disciples. Children model the behavior of their parents. Decades ago, Harry Chapin had a really famous song called Cats in the Cradle. And if you have gray hair, you know the song. And if you don't, maybe you've heard it. But the final two lines reflect the father's observation about his son. He says, as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Parents, I guarantee you, your kids are becoming just like you. And adults, you're just like your parents. Now, maybe there have been some exceptions and some changes, and maybe you've had to work through some things and go through therapy and whatever to try to wrong some of the rights and the stuff, okay? Other way around. Right some of the wrongs. Thank you. You need therapy after the therapy, yeah. But there's a natural progression that happens when we spend time with people. We become like them. See, I believe the vision that Jesus had as he stood there with his followers was that they would be just like him. They would become people just like Jesus was. He spent all this time with them. He modeled the life. And after 3 years of living with Jesus 24/7, it was somewhat natural for them to just be like him. Maybe they started to talk like him and act like him and think like him and do some of the things and eat like him. He would reproduce. And they would reproduce their lives into others, he said, who would become just like them. And the next generation would pass the baton to the next and the next and the next. You know, one of my favorite verses in all the Bible, and it's kind of fun to remember the address too. It's 2 Timothy 2:2. 2 Timothy 2:2. Paul writes to his disciple Timothy, and he says this, "The things you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others." And what's so fun about this verse is there are four generations in one verse. We see Paul talking to Timothy about reliable people who will teach others. One verse, four generations. You know, I stand before you as Mr. Schneeman because of Mr. Schneeman, my dad, and his dad, Mr. Schneeman, and his dad, Mr. Schneeman, who came over on a boat from the old country. I stand before you as a disciple of my dad, who is a disciple of his dad, who is a disciple of his dad, who is a disciple of a guy in a bar in Germany or Hungary. I can never remember which. Germany. My great-great-grandfather was a bouncer in a bar, and this guy just shared Jesus with him, and he embraced the faith. This guy on the other side of the planet follows Jesus, goes home. His wife says, "There's no way this is going to work out." She was so skeptical. She's like, "Yeah, you and religion, that, good luck." And over time, she began to see that his faith was real. It was genuine. And she surrendered her life to Christ. And then they came across the ocean and they had children, a bunch of them. My grandfather was one, and the faith of them was passed on to my grandfather, who passed it on to my dad, who passed it on to me. And now I'm passing on to my kids. You see the progression. And there is this biological progression of people having children, having children, having children, and then there's a spiritual progression of people having children, who have children, who have children, who have children. In my case, they kind of ran parallel. I was so blessed to receive from my dad both biological life and spiritual life. And here's the thing, we can be very intentional or we can be very passive about this stuff. Most parents, they just kind of go about life and do stuff and they don't think a whole lot about their kids unless they're misbehaving, and then they try to just make sure they stop misbehaving and they go about their life. And then next thing you know, it's graduation day and they're like, "What happened and why are you the way that you are?" And until we say, you know, I need to be intentional. What am I going to pour into this child? Maybe books are involved, seminars, you know, conferences, like good parenting stuff. Be intentional. And the same thing is true with our spiritual lives. That we can be intentional or we can just kind of passively follow Jesus. But the thing is, you really can't passively follow anyone. I mean, by definition, following requires action. And so we don't passively follow Jesus. We must be intentional. I don't know about you, but I want to leave a legacy to my kids. I want my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, both biologically and spiritually, to be known as men and women of faith, hope, and love. Men and women filled with love and joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. And I have to be honest, I'm hardly a perfect example of this myself. And so to expect them to mirror me is, well, there's going to be imperfections there. But I've tried and I will continue to try the rest of my life to be intentional about living my life in such a way and helping train and guide and equip and empower them to live their lives in such a way that it looks like Jesus. Great, you say, but how? How do we leave a legacy? How do we make disciples? Well, I'm really, really glad you asked. And first and foremost, we have to be a disciple. I mean, you can't really pass on something that you're not already yourself, right? We become disciples ourselves. We teach what we know, but we reproduce who we are. Think about that. We reproduce who we are. All of us have mentors, and there are people who have influenced us, and this includes family, but it also includes authors and teachers and friends and some of your disciplers, some of your mentors, if you will, the influencers in your life. Some of them you've met. Some of them maybe you've never met because they're dead authors. Maybe they're people even in the Bible, and we read the writings of these people, and we let it shape us. I remember my dad asking me once, you know, who was mentoring me? And here's a question for you this morning. Whose disciple are you? You know, since my kids were little, I always said, you are your friends. Choose wisely. You are your friends. Choose wisely. The people that influence you, sometimes you don't even know who influences you. It just sort of happens. It could be a TV star. It could be a movie star. It could be a sports figure that influences you because you read about them and you study their lives and you take their advice. You buy the stuff that they sell on TV. It might be a family member. It might be a boss or a coworker. But particularly for people under 18, and dare I say people over 18 as well, it's often friends. Your friends influence you so much. This summer I had a great conversation with Trevor and he says, "Dad, man, I love tattoos. I really love tattoos. They're so great." And he said, "But I can't figure out why I like tattoos so much." I said, "Trevor, do any of your friends have tattoos?" And he's like, "All of them." Yeah, I don't think that's an accident. I mean, it's just kind of a silly example, but we are our friends. We are influenced by so many people. Now, again, we all have conscious mentors or disciplers and also some subconscious ones like friends and family members, but you can choose mentors. You can have A.B.W. Tozer, for instance, could be one of your disciplers. You can learn from him by, even though he's been gone for many years, you can read his books, or A.B. Simpson, or any number of different authors. You might approach someone and say, "Hey, I really admire you. I admire your life. Would you be willing to invest in me?" Some of you I know have done that. You've actually approached someone and you've said, "Look, I so admire and appreciate you, and I know you're really busy and you've got a lot going on in your life, but I just feel like you have so much to offer me. Would you be willing to spend time with me? Would you be willing to disciple me?" I don't think there's any greater compliment anyone could ever receive than to be approached by someone like that. So before you think, "Oh, they'll never say yes," or "That would be really awkward," I encourage you, is there someone in your life you think, I really admire that person? Spend time with them. Take them out to lunch. I mean, buy them lunch. That always works well. You know, buy them coffee. "Can I spend some time with you?" And I know some of you have probably never even had this thought before. And this includes younger people. Younger people. Are there some older people, maybe in this room or maybe outside this room, and you just think, "Man, I want to be like them someday. I really appreciate and admire them." Approach them. "Hey, would you be willing to spend some time with me? Would you be willing to invest some of your time and energy?" You know, I was thinking this week about Sayo, and perhaps the greatest discipler among our Sayo family, and I'm so glad she's here this morning, is Mary Alexoff. I've heard so many stories about particularly women at Sayo that have been mentored. They've been discipled by Mary. And Mary has just leaked into their lives in the most beautiful and wonderful way, the way that she has discipled people. And Mary, I'm thrilled that you're here today, and I'm thrilled for the legacy that you leave all across this room and with so many people that aren't here. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I would imagine, I don't really know all the details, but I would imagine in some cases you probably approached people and said, "Hey, you know, I'm starting a Bible study, or I'd like to invite you out for coffee." Actually, I know you've done that. You've been intentional. And then in other instances, maybe people have approached you and said, "Hey, can I buy you coffee? Can I spend time with you?" But regardless of who initiates, there's time. They say that love is spelled T-I-M-E. And that's how we really learn and grow. We spend time with people. And many of you have been great disciplers, but I wanted to just highlight Mary in particular, because so many people have said, "Mary has discipled me. Mary has invested her life. She's reproduced her life in me." And what a blessing it's been. So thank you, Mary. Now, I probably just made Mary as uncomfortable as she's ever been in her entire life. And part of it, just knowing Mary's heart, is like, "But I'm not a perfect example." And that's right. Mary's not perfect. But she's a real example. See, we're not called to be perfect examples. We're supposed to be examples of the perfect one. But we are to be real, living examples. And no matter how adequate or inadequate you may feel about discipling someone else, know that you don't have to be perfect. You just have to know the perfect one, and you have to leak some Jesus on them. And when you screw up, not if, to be real and say, I screwed up. Follow me as I follow the example of Christ, Paul said. I love this verse. He doesn't say, follow me because I follow Christ. Follow me because I always follow Christ. Follow me as I follow Christ. And as I don't follow Christ, don't follow me. Just keep following Christ. Who's discipling you? Who would you like to disciple you? Ask them. Many of you are discipled each week by your life group leader. And I think our life group leaders are some of the most important people here in our SIO family. Because week after week after week, they lead and guide and shepherd and disciple. Who are you discipling? I can't disciple, you might say. Yes, you can, and you do because people are watching you. Whether you realize it or not, you've got people that are following you and influencing you. College students, there are high schoolers in this room that are watching your life. High schoolers, there are middle schoolers in this room that are watching your life. Whether you know it or not, they're watching you. So go to them. Hey, how can I serve you? How can I help you? You don't have to be a perfect example, just a living example. In fact, mentoring is about what we offer someone through our wisdom and experience. But discipleship is really different because it's about what Jesus can offer someone through his wisdom and through his presence flowing through us. We're not called to produce living water as much as we are to be conduits of it. See, we are not the baton. That would be like Jesus that we pass from generation to generation. But we are just called to pass the baton on, so to speak. Pass it on to others. For the last several years, I've had just such a thrill to spend some time with some young men here at SIO and just get together with them. And as many of you know, we huddle over at Big B Coffee and we do life together and we talk and sometimes we serve together and we study the word together and we pray together. We just do life together. And it's fun. It's great fun. Sometimes it has elements that are formal and sometimes it's just hanging out. It's just doing stuff. I mean, sometimes we've gone out to concerts together and parks and done all sorts of stuff. Like Jesus, I chose them after seeing potential to be reproducing disciples. Jesus didn't ask everyone to be a disciple. He was specific. And that really upset a lot of people because they thought, well, why didn't you pick me? For one thing, Jesus couldn't pick everyone because there are thousands and thousands of people. But for various reasons, after fasting and praying, he chose 12. He said, I'm going to pour into you. And really, he looked at three and said, I'm going to really pour into you. I'm sure the other nine were furious. What's up with Peter, James, and John? Why do they get all Jesus' time? Jesus saw something in them, and it was pretty legit because Peter, James, and John did some amazing things after that experience. But I chose some guys and I said, hey, I see something in you. I see great potential in you and I want to pour my life into you. Provided, 2 Timothy 2:2, the one condition that you pour your life into other people. Because I didn't want to just stop at one generation. I wanted to pour, and I'm always looking for people that I can pour my life into that will pour their lives into others and into others and into others. It's a strategy of Jesus. Mike Breen, a distant discipler of mine, I've had a chance to talk to him very briefly, but he's influenced me in recent years, and he wrote a book called Building a Discipling Culture. And if you're really interested in next steps in all this, like what does discipling look like and how do I disciple and what's a huddle and such, I can't recommend this book enough. It's just tools. It's just filled with tools. Some of the best discipleship tools I've ever found. And I've been studying this stuff for 25 years. And this book is just recommended reading for anyone seeking to become a disciple, to make disciples. It's not something, by the way, that I do as a pastor or a professional Christian. Some people think, well, yeah, of course, you're the pastor. That's your job. Go make disciples. No, it's our job, and it's not just a professional thing. None of the guys that I've been discipling are professional clergy, and I don't know that any of them ever will be, and I don't know that ever any of them ever should be. Jesus didn't say to the clergy, make disciples, to the professional, make disciples, to the priest, make disciples. No, he said to his followers, just go and make disciples. Some of them we know were tent makers. Some of them were fishermen. Some of them did all sorts of different occupations. But he discipled them. He poured his life into them, and they poured their lives into others and others and others and others. And today, we stand on their shoulders. Just a word of caution, discipleship is not easy. It requires an investment of our very lives. And Jesus made this really clear. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. Surrender. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very soul? I mean, this is it, friends. I mean, this is what Jesus, I mean, this is the mission. It's just to make disciples. It's to reproduce our lives. It's to know Jesus and make him known to others who will make him known to others who will make him known to others. Two more things, just in closing. Go and make disciples, he says, of all nations. And we talked about this a bit last week, this theme of diversity. And it beautifully fits our county, where there are people in our county from more than 100 nations. As I've often said, you can reach the world without a passport in this community. But you can also reach the world with a passport, and some of us are going to do that this summer. We're going to go down to the Dominican Republic, which, by the way, was one of the prayer nations yesterday, if you're reading through our prayer book together. But we're taking a team down, as you all know. And why? I mean, ultimately, it's to make disciples. It doesn't mean in a week, you know, we're all going to have 50 disciples, you know, of our own. But there's teams of people down there that are in the process of making disciples, and we're going down to serve them, to assist them, to work with them, and perhaps to begin building some relationships of our own that we could convey through the internet and such. The other thing is that ultimately we are not disciples of Paul or Tozer or Simpson or Mary Alexoff. We are to be disciples of Jesus. It simply helps to see Jesus with skin on. It helps to see examples of Christ's likeness in other people, which is why we need each other, which is why we are called to live out this mission. We must spend time with disciples, but also with Jesus. If we are to love and follow King Jesus, we need to be with him. We need to read the word. We need to know not just about him, but to know him and spend time in prayer and solitude and listening to him. We need to spend time reading his teachings and understanding what he taught and how he lived his life and mirroring our lives likewise. So in conclusion, I have a dream. And yeah, I know I have lots of dreams. But I have a dream that Sio would be known as a place, a family that makes disciples. I mean, this is such a huge part of why we exist, to reproduce in the next generation. Some of you know that for a while our nursery has been empty around here. It's been very, very empty, and we've been praying that it would be filled. And later this year, there'll be at least one or two babies back there, which will be really exciting. Babies are exciting, and they can be loud and messy, but they're very, very exciting. And of course, the excitement of babies is not merely their present state, but their future potential as they grow up. In the same way, I'm praying for the spiritual nursery of Sio to be filled, specifically for this baptistry to be filled. I'd like to fill it every week. I'm praying that our baptistry be filled, that we would join angels who rejoice every time a soul is saved. And of course, that's not the end of the journey, but it's an important milestone in this journey to become like Christ. When someone makes that commitment to Jesus, when they express that faith to say, I want to be a disciple of Jesus, who makes disciples of Jesus, who makes disciples of Jesus. And if you've been baptized, you have a God-given responsibility and privilege to help others in the journey, to help others experience Jesus, to make disciples. So two questions in closing. Who is discipling you, and who are you discipling? You might call that the circle of life. But it's why we exist. It's why we exist. It's God's mission for every man, woman, and child, not just the pastors, not just the clergy, for all of us. And it's a joy to play a small role in his mission to make disciples of all nations. To God be the glory for the great things that he has done.